You'll never get out of there, Plastic Man.
Can you believe that guy?
Plastic Man! Plastic Man! Plastic Man!
He's a real good guy in a bright red suit. And he always wears goggles and a belt that's a beaut. He was a crook, but he reformed and then he reformed and reformed and reformed again.
Plastic Man,
the one, the original Elastic Man. Always in great shape for the shape he's in.
The Fantastic Plastic Man.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Plasticast, the monthly podcast dedicated to the longest arm of the law, Plastic Man. This podcast is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, and I'm your equally proud host, Max Romero. I am also a liar. In the last episode, I said we'd be talking about Woozy Winks next, but that's not going to happen. At least not this time. Don't worry, we will be getting back to Woozy, but this time around there's a chill in the air, leaves are falling screaming to the ground, and something wicked this way comes. It's Halloween, my favorite time of year. And in this episode, we're going to take a look at one of Plastic Man's scary stories. As I mentioned before, Plastic Man creator Jack Cole had experience working in a wide variety of genres before hitting pay dirt with Plaz, something he shared with most creators of the time. Cole worked on gag comics, crime comics, horror comics, and everything in between, and it all served him well when it came to his own creation. And all those genres found a place in Plastic Man, sometimes all at once. A good example is Plastic Man number 39. Which is cover dated January 1953, but was actually on stands on October 8th, 1952. Thanks, as always, to Mike's Amazing World of Comics for the publishing info. So, that means this issue was a Halloween issue, and the guys at Quality Comics made it count, with an issue that featured four different spooky stories. Now, I say the guys because at this point, Jack Cole was rarely doing any of the scripting, and even less of the art himself. Much of the actual work was being done by anonymous staffers, or ghost writers, with Cole providing story ideas and essentially acting as an editor of the Plastic Man books. Reprints of older stories were also about to become more common. In a way, this kind of worked out. While readers were losing Jack Cole's distinctive and groundbreaking art style, they were at least getting a look that was a little more realistic and filled with deep noir shadowing and close-ups of harried-looking faces. It's definitely a departure, but in keeping with Plastic Man's crime story roots. Also, many of the stories themselves were getting darker, to the point that even Plaz himself can seem worn by the ambiguous results of his crime busting. Plastic Man still came out on top, but the moral seemed to be that these victories came at a price. Of course, that doesn't mean these stories weren't still a lot of fun. In this issue alone, we get Plaz and Woozy cracking an interdimensional counterfeiting ring, the biggest casualty here is Woozy's good looks, a Scooby Gang-style ghost story, and a delightful Woozy solo story about a haunted house that's revealed as really just being a way for the menfolk in a small village to sneak away for a night of poker. When Woozy accidentally exposes the card-playing cabal to the men's wives, all hell breaks loose. Have you been keeping count? That was only three stories, and the fourth is the one we'll be talking about today. It's the first story in Plastic Man number 39, and it's also the darkest tale, with the grimmest and most uncanny conclusion of the set. We're going to take a short promo break, and when we come back, we'll follow The Stairway to Madness!
Hey there! I'm Nathaniel with some exciting news about the Punch Like a Girl podcast! Oh, hey, Liz! I'm just doing the promo. Tell the people about how the podcast we do together covering graphic novels and trade collections starring female protagonists is moving to... And, actually, I'm mansplaining again, aren't I?
Uh-huh.
Well, I can just, here you go.
Punch Like a Girl is joining the Fire and Water Network, and as of October will be found on the network feed and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Is it okay if I just invite folks to join us in celebrating the girls who kick butt?
I think you already did.
Yes! Nailed it!
Don't worry, folks. I'll keep him in line.
Which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man.
I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Doc who?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Welcome back, and welcome to The Stairway to Madness, a story featured in Plastic Man number 39, an unofficial but totally on purpose Halloween issue from October 1952. Let us ascend. Our story begins with an amazingly gruesome splash page featuring a witchly figure at the top of a spiral staircase, who's looking down at the alarmed faces of Plastic Man and Woozy in a nice bit of cinematic perspective. The staircase is littered with skulls and skeletons, a fat, dripping candle, and worst of all, a body lying face down on the steps, blood oozing from a dagger stab deep into his back. The witch is holding a voodoo doll of Plastic Man and is an inch away from slipping a long needle into its chest. Her cackling laughter drifts down the stairs. Sounds great, right? Well, forget it, because none of this happens in the actual story and we never see that witch again. Instead, our story actually opens in a train station, where Bullethead Becker and his bodyguards are trying to catch a train out of town. They think the coast is clear, but at the last minute a station sign turns out to be Plastic Man. Plaz asks, "What is your destination, Bullethead?" But it's a rhetorical question, as Plaz himself answers, "Your destination is the nearest penitentiary." Plastic Man makes short work of the bodyguards, even spinning back a grenade one of the hoods manages to dunk into Plaz's mouth. Bullethead manages to get on the train, though, and a loose sign on the caboose helps him make his getaway. Outside of town, things get decidedly more rural, and Bullethead jumps off the train and decides he needs to rent a place where he can lie low. Coming across an old man dozing under his cowboy hat, Bullethead asks if there's anything available in town. The old man tells him nothing's available for rent or sale, nothing but the Dannerwood House. "But there's nobody in his right mind gonna rent that place." "Why not?" Bullethead demands. The old man replies, "Because it's haunted, that's why. Been strange things happening in the Dannerwood House for more than 40 years. Things that would shrivel a man's soul just to talk about." The old man's dire warning sounds like a perfect opportunity to Bullethead. A haunted house would be the perfect place to hide out. The next morning, a real estate agent takes Bullethead to the Dannerwood House, where he tells him that people don't even like living anywhere close to the place. As a real estate agent, he says, "I shouldn't tell you this, but the stories about the Dannerwood House aren't all mere superstition." "You mean you've seen ghosts?" Bullethead asks. "Not exactly," says the real estate agent, "but that stairway. No one's ever found out where it leads to. Young Dannerwood refused to let visitors in his house ever climb those stairs. A few people have tried climbing the stairs since," the agent continues, glancing at the cobweb-covered spiral staircase. "None of them were ever seen or heard of again. It's said that young Dannerwood was a devil worshipper and..." Bullethead brusquely interrupts the agent. "Never mind the details. I like this house, and I'll take it. At my own risk." Bullethead will eventually wish he'd paid attention to the rest of that story, but first he tries to climb the stairs himself. But as he puts his foot down on the first step, a feeling of cold terror gripped his body, and with each step the stairs creak with a sound like a human voice in pain. Bullethead flies back down the stairs, trying to convince himself that he's still stressed from his running with Plastic Man. Speaking of whom, back at FBI headquarters, Plaz is briefing Chief Branner on Bullethead's escape. After chewing out our hero, Branner sends Plastic Man out to pick up the mobster's trail. Bullethead is a big spender, Plaz explains to Woozy, and won't be long before he's asking some of his known contacts for ready cash. A few days later, a criminal moneylender wonders why he can't open his safe so he can send 10 grand to Bullethead. He should have asked himself why his safe is red and yellow, because it's Plastic Man in disguise. He quickly dispatches the crook, saying, "The grapevine was right. I heard that if Bullethead tried to borrow from anyone, it would be you." After the fracas, Plaz grabs the letter sent by Bullethead, but discovers that it only has a post office box for a return address. Still, it's a lead, and Plastic Man and Woozy hit the road. Back at the Dannerwood House, Bullethead is having another sleepless night. As soon as the moon rises, so too do the voices coming from the floor above, a rhythmic chanting that has set Bullethead on edge. "This is the fifth night in a row I've heard it," Bullethead says in a cold sweat. "It seems to get louder and plainer all the time. I can almost make out the words, in some kind of foreign language. It's the devil worshippers. They're upstairs in the house, holding some terrible ritual. I won't listen!" With dawn returns the comforting rays of the sun, as well as Bullethead's resolve. He'll climb the stairs and prove to himself that there's nothing to fear. Meanwhile, Plastic Man and Woozy are hot on his trail. Arriving at the post office, the duo seem to come to a dead end until Plaz notices the old man, who's looking intently at a wanted poster for none other than Bullethead Becker. Plastic Man asks if he's seen the man in the photo, and the old man tells him yes, that's the idiot who rented the Dannerwood house. Plaz and Woozy hop in the car, taking corners so fast Plaz loses his rubber legs and nearby trees to keep them on the road. What a break, Plaz says. We've picked up Bullethead Becker's trail. I can hardly wait to meet him again. Didn't you hear what the old man said, Plaz? Woozy stammers. There's ghosts in that house. That isn't going to stop us, Woozy. You're not superstitious, are you? Since you put it that way, yes. At that very moment, Bullethead reaches the top of the staircase back at the Dannerwood house. He congratulates himself on proving there was nothing to fear, even while he's intrigued by a large iron door at the head of the staircase. He pushes the heavy, rusted door open to see a band of living skeletons bowing and raising their brittle arms in worship to a hideous altar topped with a statue of Satan himself. Bullethead runs screaming out of the room, down the stairs and into the waiting arms of Plastic Man. Now, trying to escape the horrifying scene he just left, as well as the rubber lawman, Bullethead snaps. Laughing, Bullethead cracks a lit oil lantern over Plastic Man's head, distracting Plaz long enough to make a run for it back up the stairs. Woozy yells to Plastic Man, Plaz, come back! This joint is on fire! But Plastic Man is already stretching up the staircase and replies, I saw where Bullethead Becker went, and I'm not leaving without him! At the heavy door, Plastic Man hears a blood-curdling scream. With a single powerful wrench, Plastic Man rips the iron door from its hinges. Then he stops, as in the flame-wreathed smoke of the room, he sees a dreadful vision. And what does he see? There, among the smoke and flames, is Bullethead Becker, being held down by the skeletons at the base of the satanic altar, a look of terror etched into his face as one of the demons raises a long dagger. Gazing down from the top of the altar, the statue of Satan looks pleased. Before Plastic Man can do anything, the entire house collapses. Woozy, safely outside, is overjoyed when Plaz stretches out of the rubble. Before the house fell, Plaz explains, he managed to make his way to the basement in relative safety. Seeing Plastic Man cover his face with his hand, Woozy mistakes his horror for guilt and tries to reassure him that Plaz did all he could. Plastic Man tells him that's not it, but can't bring himself to tell Woozy what he saw in the Dannerwood house. Later, back in town, Plastic Man and Woozy are talking to the old man. Plastic Man says, You say that young Dannerwood and his disciples of evil mysteriously disappeared? No one knows what happened to them? The old man replies, Some say the devil himself came down to claim them, and there's others who tell how Dannerwood and his friends still gather in the old house to perform the old rituals and offer up human sacrifices to Satan. I don't know the truth of it, and don't wanna, but I figure it's just as well the Dannerwood house burned to the ground. In the final panel, Plastic Man, surrounded by darkness and his face heavily shadowed, thinks to himself, I could have been mistaken about what I saw. I'll never be able to tell it to anyone. In any case, the case of Bullethead Becker is closed. When it comes to the Golden Age run of Plastic Man, this era includes some of my favorite stories. That will probably be blasphemy to some because the art was usually done by someone other than Jack Cole, and it's not certain how much input he even had on the scripts themselves, though I tend to think he was definitely involved in the plotting at least. But the stories occasionally took an unexpected, sometimes darker turn, which reflected Cole's own origin in comics and possibly even his own dark moods. The art itself, while not on the genius level of Cole, worked for these kinds of stories, especially where they dipped into horror and science fiction. The Stairway to Madness is a fine example of comic book noir, borrowing liberally from the films that had become a staple of movie theaters of the time. Long shadows enshrouded every panel, even when it's not particularly necessary, blanketing everything in menace. There's hardly any light at all in the train tunnels, and even daytime scenes seem to be set during a quickly melting twilight. Light itself is used effectively, from moonbeams streaming into Bullethead's tomb-like bedroom to the backlighting of the burning house. In the last panel, darkness threatens to overtake everything, with the background of solid black and even Plastic Man himself weighed down by the horror he's just witnessed. The only bright spot is the halo of the old man's cowboy hat, crowning the person who set the whole story in motion, but remains blissfully ignorant and untouched by the evil on his doorstep. So who wrote this story? Who drew it? We'll probably never know. But it's nice to know that the story left its mark, and it's still able to rise again for another Halloween. And now for the news. As you may know, Plastic Man has been sneaking his way back into the DC Universe as part of the publisher's Rebirth relaunch, with most of the attention focused on his Silly Putty Egg appearances in Dark Days Metal. As of this recording, Metal is up to issue 3, but Plastic Man has so far been confined to a giant vibrating egg, with Mr. Terrific acting as his caretaker. This is no doubt helping lay the foundation for the Terrifics, a team book that will be, let's call it an homage, to the Fantastic Four that is scheduled to arrive February 7th, 2018, according to the DC website. The Terrifics will feature the work of writer Jeff Lemire, artist Joel Prado and Ivan Reis, and character designs by Evan Doc Shanner. Shanner will then take over as the main artist with issue 4, which I'm really looking forward to because he's one of my favorite artists, and he's had a history of drawing Plastic Man just for fun. Plaz has also been appearing in Injustice 2 since issue number 8, along with his son Luke McDonough, aka Offspring. The current storyline, set on an alternative Earth and based on the video game of the same name, brings Plaz and Luke back from their appearance in Injustice Gods Among Us Year 4 Annual Number 1. Obviously, still a mouthful. And it's a very welcome return because writer Tom Taylor really writes a fantastic Plastic Man. Honestly, it's one of the best characterizations of Plaz in a very long time, and Taylor does a wonderful job of balancing the Devil May Care attitude with a self-assured confidence. This Plastic Man really knows what he's doing. Artist Bruno Redondo and occasional artist Daniel Sampier are having fun with Plaz's shape changes and show wonderful attention to body language, which is not an easy thing when you consider you're dealing with characters whose body shapes are constantly changing. If somehow DC saw its way to giving Plastic Man another shot at a solo title, please, I'd love to see Taylor and Redondo on that book. That's the news, so I'll be right back with listener feedback from the last episode.
Hi, Plastic Man here doing what no other superhero does. I share my mail. Here's one that says, "Hey man, how's it going? Man, your show is far out. Take care, man. Please, when you write me, you don't have to call me by my last name. We're friends and you've been seeing me for a while now. So just a simple dear Plaz will do."
Welcome to the first Plastic Mailbag. I got lots of great feedback from all of you, the listeners, and I truly, truly appreciate it. Plasticast got Facebook likes from Ruth Sutherland, Tina Brackens, Clinton Robison, Scott Slemons, Tom Alvarado, Dave Farabee, Michael Ozymandias, Patrick Joseph, Charles Ward, Michael Anthony Carroll, David Lounsbury, Matt Ruber, Gord Tolton, Kevin Culp, Sammy Goldberg, Jacob Edwards, Keith G. Baker, Luke Dobb, Gene Hendricks, Jeremy Gunter, Khalil Kamandi, Todd Strickland, Ali Almeida, Scott Rowland, Daniel Adams, Glenn O'Neill, Ted Kilvington, Ozzy Ray, Sean Brock, Derek William Crabb, Terry O'Malley, Mark McGee, Kevin Lauderdale, Chris Tyler, Chuck Rodriguez, Tim Rooney, David Foster, Leslie Hall Trigg III, Sean Emmons, John Grenier, Michael Sidurio, Michael Sidurlo, Max Traver, Terrence Cossenway, and Brian Cray. Twitter likes and mentions came from Siskoid, Coffee and Comics, Keith G. Baker, Robert Lewis, Kyle Jones, Justin Prine, Zoom Yukinori, Todd McMahon, Xenozoic Xenophiles, James Hudson, The Signal Watch, and Richard Field. Also on Twitter, James Hudson left a very nice comment, saying, "My son and I really enjoyed this podcast. He really learned to love Plastic Man when he discovered him on the Batman the Brave and the Bold cartoon. Thanks for writing in, James. It really makes my day to hear that you and your son are sharing this together, so that's great." Back on the Fire and Water Podcast Network site, Clinton Robson says, "I too got my start from the cartoon, although it was in reruns by then. Where's the love for Baby Plaz? Come on. I mean, yeah, I haven't actually seen anything of Baby Plaz in 30-plus years, so as far as I know, he might actually be the scrappy dude of the Plastic Man franchise. But in my mind, he is less the Cousin Oliver and more the, well, whatever a less annoying additional character is." Oh, Clinton. Clinton, Clinton. By the way, that's going to be a recurring theme. The cartoon people are referencing is the Plastic Man comedy adventure show, which, myself included, was a lot of people's first introduction to Plastic Man. A case in point is Siskoid, a fellow member of the podcast network with shows including the Lonely Hearts Romance Comics podcast, Ohatmu or Not, and First Strike the Invasion podcast. He's also Canadian, which is pertinent to what he says here. "Like you, the cartoon show was my introduction to Plastic Man, so I was shocked, shocked I say, to discover he wasn't an important comic star when I started buying American comics. My favorite part of his publication history, however, is one you didn't mention, and that's his first true DC Comics appearance as the Dial H hero. That was crazy. I demand a special episode on that time Robbie Reed became the Pliable Police Comics protagonist, but I'll take whatever I can get until then." Believe me, we'll be talking about Plastic Man's first kind of sort of appearance in DC Comics back in House of Mystery number 160, and hopefully Siskoid, who's an expert on the Dial H for Hero series, will be able to join me for that. Chris Franklin, another member of the podcast network, who hosts shows including Batman Nightcast and the Supermates podcast, writes, I must have known of Plastic Man from somewhere before the cartoon, because I remember being so excited for the Saturday morning preview show, which aired the Friday night before his cartoon debut. I seem to recall fussing at my parents to get home so I could watch it. Another DC show on the same network as the Super Friends was a big deal to me at age 4, or whatever. When Plaz guest starred in the Super Friends comic, again drawn by Ramona Freyden, that was huge. I liked the show a lot, but I'm with you on Baby Plaz. To me, he is the scrappy duo of the superhero set. I didn't like the format of the show changing after just one season. Maybe after season 3 or 4. Maybe. Looking forward to more. Thanks, Chris. So, for those of you keeping score, that's one for Baby Plaz, one against. Ryan Daly says, great lead-off episode, Max. This was even better than your guest spot on Secret Origins podcast. Probably because you didn't have me dragging the whole story of Plaz's creation down. Can't wait to hear more. This, of course, is a ridiculous statement, because Ryan Daly, who is another member of the podcast network, hosted the wonderful Secret Origins podcast and continues to produce shows like Power of Fishnets and Midnight the Podcasting Hour. Seriously, go look those up. David Ace Gutierrez says, Woozy would be proud. Great job, Max. Actually, he uses my full name, which seems a little formal. Glad the FNW network has added you. Now get to work on that Phantom Lady show. I don't know where that comes from, but if it was a Phantom Girl show, maybe we'd have something. Rob Kelly, one of the founders of the network, and really the godfather of the Plasticast, says, Plastic Man has been one of my top 5 fave comic book characters since I was a kid. I'm A, so glad there's finally a podcast about him, and B, that it's on our network. Plaz running in 2 comics simultaneously for all of the 40s is amazing, and then he disappeared so completely. I wonder what his level of pop culture fame would have been if he had somehow kept appearing throughout the 1950s. Really looking forward to future installments of this show. You know, that's a really good question and something I've kind of wondered about, because there is obviously something about Plastic Man that kind of stayed in the pop culture psyche, because if not, I don't think we would have had, well, we definitely wouldn't have had the Elongated Man, who was created because DC wanted a Plastic Man-like character, not realizing that they actually owned Plastic Man. We wouldn't have Mr. Fantastic. We basically wouldn't have any kind of stretchy hero who came out after 1941. And the fact that even after such a long absence, he still managed to plug right back into the comic book audience, it really says something about the character, I think. And who knows, maybe Plastic Man was kind of robbed. There's every reason to believe that Plastic Man might have been one of those big characters instead of being a character that most people kind of know. Brian Linton wrote in to say, my first encounter with Plastic Man was on the old cartoon show. It wasn't until Grant Morrison brought him into JLA that I followed him on a regular basis in the pages of a comic book. So I'm looking forward to getting to know Plastic Man better and to see how he's been depicted by different creative teams over the years. Me too! Chuck Coletta says, I have been waiting for this show with anticipation. I too became aware of Plaz on Saturday morning TV and have only really read some of the DC archives filled with Cole's great work. Those are beautiful books. It's really too bad that they're out of print. It's a shame that someone so creative, who created such a positive heroic character, had such a tragic end. I was surprised to recently learn that Plaz did turn up briefly in live action. That again is the Plastic Man comedy adventure show, which had an actor named Taylor Marks, who in the role of Plastic Man, introduced the show and various segments throughout the show. And yes, unfortunately, Jack Cole did have a sad ending, and ended his life on August 13, 1958. Jason Pope wrote, your enthusiasm for Plastic Man is infectious. Let's hope your insurance covers that, Jason. I always watched the Saturday morning cartoon when I was a kid, so he's always been on my radar. Like Firestorm, my favorite comic book hero, I've always thought Plastic Man is one of the most powerful heroes out there. His power set, like Firestorm. Okay, all this mention of Firestorm is going to go straight to Shag's head, so you guys need to watch out. Is godlike. The guy is not just stretchy, but he can shapeshift into literally anything and is virtually indestructible, as seen in the JLA Obsidian Age storyline. The guy can do anything. Mr. Fantastic and Elongated Man are great, but their powers are minuscule in comparison. I listen to most of the Fire and Water podcasts, so I thought I'd give yours a chance, and I'm in now. Looking forward to hearing more, especially after the news of his inclusion in DC's The Terrifics, I think it's called. It is. I'm on board the plastic wagon. Thanks, Jason. Ted Kilvington says, my first Plastic Man experiences were his appearance on Super Friends, a copy of Plastic Man number 11 someone had given me, Starenko's History of Comics Volume 2, and his run in Adventure Comics. If there's one specific Plaz item I would like you to cover, it would be his appearance in The Dark Knight Strikes Again. Don't worry, Ted, we'll get there. Our pal across the Atlantic, as well as the writer of Too Dangerous for a Girl, Martin Gray, says, terrific start, sir. I've liked Plaz since I came across him in Brave and the Bold in the 70s. The telly cartoon never made it to the UK. I will have to look on YouTube. And I've never seen Hula Hula. Off to have a gander. Martin, once you do, please let us know what you think. Darren and Ruth Sutherland of the Rad Network wrote in to say, "Great first episode, Max. A fun show with a fun format for a fun character." Oh, I'm thinking we're going to have a new tagline. "I like your summary and discussion and look forward to following the adventure and the rebirth." Thanks, guys. Okay, strap yourself in, do some stretches, take a deep breath. Frank wrote in, so let's see what he has to say. "First, let me say, it's about damn time. Not only is Plastic Man long overdue for a dedicated podcast, but I've also heard so many promos for this specific one without an episode having dropped that I was starting to think that it had that there tulip fever I've been hearing about forever. Second, while no one will ever top Metamorpho for swinging 60s vinyl-only DC hero theme songs, the repetition of Plazas on all those ads has given me a chance to appreciate it as a runner-up. I especially love the, quote, reformed and shape he's in bits. I had some slight resistance because I misremembered the 80s theme having more going on until I revisited it and was like, that's it? When you mentioned the date of Plaza's creation, I double-checked it. That Frank, keeping us on our toes. I thought he came along a lot earlier than that, but relative to the Golden Age, he was something of a Johnny-come-lately. He still predates Aquaman, Green Arrow, and Wonder Woman, most of the last great superheroes who arrived in that period. I think it's a testament to the quality of the character and strip that he outlasted so many heroes in his own book without any bump from the novelty the 30s heroes benefited from. I think he'd have done even better if he'd been at a more resilient publisher, but then again, there's no guarantee he'd have come into being at all without the backing and standards of Busy Arnold to propel Cole. Still, imagine his standing if he'd been the one with the Flash guest appearances and Detective Comics backups. I was also introduced to Plaster the Cartoon, which I thought stunk, but it was the only superhero show on at an opportune time in the afternoon, in syndication at least. I cursed getting Plaz instead of Robotech or Spider-Man or any of the other 60s Marvel DC shows. Also, I still despise the impossibly smug, oily live-action host. If it wasn't for the Art Spiegelman book leading me to the original Jack Cole stories, I'd probably still hate the character. Like Shag, Frank says. Say, Plaz was one of the few heroes I didn't do a deep dive on when the Secret Origins podcast was still around. I can remedy that a bit now. I must say that I vastly prefer the Cole original to the unfunny and overworked 88 version. Eel's angry look with those Gouldian features as he calls out to the putrid punks with that snazzy lettering really sells me. Aside from the pseudoscience of the acid bath, Plaz has one of the most airtight origins and modus operandi of any superhero. Shapeshifting easily allows for a dual identity, even with the minor concealment allowed by outside sunglasses, and acting as a criminal affords excellent opportunity to undermine crime. I agree with your humanist assessment of Eel's face turn, but even if it wasn't unusually coherent for 40s fare, this would still be a ripping yarn. I'm just glad the pliable paladin ditched the bat boots and asymmetrical daredevil riffing costume. Yeah, I have to agree with Frank here. He's referring to the 1988-1989 four-issue Plastic Man miniseries written by Phil Foglio, with art by Hilary Barta and Kevin Nolan. The miniseries is fun, but it's definitely a product of its time, and it's steeped in a lot of satire. That satire tends to overwhelm the story, to the level that satire is the point more than the story itself. It's fine for what it is, but it really kind of gets away from the base of what Plastic Man is. Ward Hill Terry says, "I've been a fan of Plaz since his first appearance, which I read in Jules Pfeiffer's book, many times. When I saw an issue of the Plastic Man comic on the rack in the convenience store, number 16, I was very excited. Then I read it and was initially disappointed. My thoughts then were along the lines of, they're not taking him seriously. He's not funny, he's a superhero. Who is this woozy guy and why is he in so much of the book? By the next issue, I got it. I followed Plaz in his Adventure Comics appearances, but once my avid collecting ceased in 1987, I haven't paid much attention to Plaz or many other heroes. And though I am not keen on buying and reading any Plastic Man stories from the last 30 years, oh, you should, Ward, I am keen on hearing Max tell me about them. One final thing. I have heard the promo many, many times. Man, how many times did we play that promo? And subsequently, the little snatch of the Plastic Man song is stuck in my head. However, so is the Mad Comics version of Plaz from the 1950s, which was entitled Plastic Sam. Consequently, that little snatch of music is rattling around my cranium as Plastic Sam, Plastic Sam. And yeah, that Mad Magazine parody that Ward is talking about is actually from Mad Magazine number 14, which came out in August 1954, and was done by the legendary Harvey Kurtzman. Kurtzman was actually a colleague of Cole's, and did a strip called Flatfoot Burns, which appeared in Police Comics. And finally, Alan W. Wright writes in to say, "I first read Plaz's origin in Jules Pfeiffer's The Great Comic Book Heroes. The paperback edition in the late 1970s, early 1980s still had the first comic stories reprinted, and it's a fondly remembered part of my childhood collection. I don't recall if I got the book before his cartoon came out. I certainly knew of Plaz from the Super Friends, his cartoon show, the zany Haney Brave and the Bold appearances, and the JLA issue that New Frontier borrowed so heavily from. The character I didn't know from any of those appearances was Woozy Winks. When the Adventure Comics run started, there was an ad which had Woozy proclaim, and Woozy Winks too. I just assumed that he was a miscolored hula hula, and that Woozy Winks was some jokey expression meaning crazy hijinks that I just wasn't familiar with. Like I said, we'll talk about the history of Woozy Winks in the next episode, which will be out next month. That's it for this episode, so keep those comments, shares, and retweets coming. You can find PlasticCast and leave a comment at thefireandwaterpodcastnetwork.com, and you can also find me at itsplasticman.wordpress.com, itsplasticman at Facebook and Twitter, and you can also find me on social media at Maxo Romero. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the home stretch.
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!